And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9, back in the driver's seat, Brian Keller and...
Dan Fernandez!
That's right, welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah, you were gone last week.
Yes, I was at South by Southwest debuting our Boxing Bots project.
That is awesome. How'd it go?
And we also did a talk. So we're doing Hack Anything with Kinect. Mm. So we showed off our Kinect turret, had another speaker, John Boyles from Yelp. He had a cool Garry's Mod using Kinect.
What's a Garry's Mod?
You don't know Garry's Mod? Half-Life 2?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Got it.
Basically, the idea is you can use your body, have it in the game, and then use physics. So, like, you set up a bunch of crates, and you can basically punch and kick them, and then use the whole physics engine and Garry's Mod with Kinect.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So all that stuff's on Channel 9?
Yes, John's stuff isn't. You know, it's interesting. The South by Southwest folks do not do session recordings and make them available.
Boo.
They record the podcast, but I think it's kind of odd. So there are random videos from people who actually attended that have their, like, you know, their
bootlegs.
Phone. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Bootlegs.
Got it. Cool. All right. Well, that sounds like fun. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. All right. So top story here. Another fun project that you can finally, well, you've been talking about it for a while, but we haven't really seen anything until the teasers now.
Yes, so definitely watch our teaser. So Inside West Coast Customs, a TV show with Ryan Friedlinghouse, who people may know from Pimp My Ride, mm-hmm. ever so famous. So the West Coast Customs crew, we got invited to do basically a car,
yep.
a Microsoft car. Me, Clint, Brian Peake, and Jeff... basically built a lot of the car, and our friends at 352 Media did the UX design for the instrument cluster and the heads-up display.
That's cool.
So we actually give a shout-out to them during the show, too.
Nice.
You basically see us going from scratch to building a car.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, so you can watch the preview, and the big thing is the show will air March 25th.
Is it fast?
Is it fast?
Is the car fast?
The car is fast.
Nice.
It is a supercharged V8.
Have you driven it?
There's issues. I don't want Dan or Glenn driving the car.
Nice.
I want to go cruising with that.
Okay. So next story, bring single sign-on and SkyDrive to your Windows 8 apps with the Live SDK. What's
yes.
this all about?
So the idea here is now that you have the Live SDK, mm-hmm. You want to be able to bring single sign-on. Right, so if you're already logged into Windows 8, you have the authentication, but how do you enable that authentication and actually use SkyDrive as a service within your applications? And really, the solution is to use the Live SDK, which gives you that one way, since people are already signing up for Windows 8 and mm-hmm. need authentication there, you can use the same mechanism within your application, so you feel just like an application.
So the same Live ID, I don't have to sign in separately anywhere else.
So imagine each app had their own, that would be kind of a pain, so you can use the Live SDK within your application.
Got it. And this article takes you through how to do that.
Yes.
Cool. So next up we have the a developer's article taking you through how to use the Microsoft Advertising SDK for Windows 8 Metro apps. So I actually signed up for an account and kind of got halfway through this experience. And the idea is that you can sign up for an account and you can say what type of application yours is. So maybe yours is a gardening application. So then they're going to target the ads like you would expect for gardeners that are using your application. And then you can say you can select from a number of different choices for vertical or horizontal advertisements that you then just drop a control on your application, and then it renders and you get paid. So
all right, cool. And the point really is we're trying to make it easy for developers to be able to do, say, free applications
ad-supported
free applications.
That's right.
This is another way, you know, just another option in terms of a business model.
Yeah, absolutely. So why push from Azure, Dan?
So I think this is an interesting article in that it basically takes a step back and says, for people who aren't familiar with the Windows Push Notification Service, or sometimes it's called WINS, but basically what's going on there is you want to be able to provide updates in some form for your application.
For your tiles, for your application data.
Yeah, so toasts coming up saying, you know, whatever happens, you know, some crazy trade has happened, you know, click here.
Okay.
And again, the tiles, meaning you can actually update what you want on that tile, maybe change a custom image, mm-hmm. You know, set severe weather alert, if you will.
Yep.
If it's an email, you can actually do, change a message count. So
right.
you can say like, okay, you now have 15 messages and so on.
Right. So obviously your choices are, you can set up your own server to do this, but why do that when Microsoft has this great cloud service that already manages that?
Yeah. And the point is, the Windows notification service isn't running your app. Nobody has to click on your app to have that happen. It automatically runs. So that's one of the good things. And one of the key design decisions is it's updating this information. That information is running on Windows 8, but it's not your code that's executed.
Right.
It's reading data from the cloud, if you will. And Azure's a great scenario, and we'll talk about our next story, which shows how you can actually use the Windows Application Toolkit?
Yeah, so speaking of our next story.
Windows Azure Toolkit, sorry.
The Windows Azure Toolkit for Windows 8 was published this week. And it allows you to wire up all those things, and it contains a bunch of samples and frameworks and examples that help you do that.
Yeah, so Wayne team did a great 4-minute video. Basically, it takes you from clicking download on CodePlex to setting up an Azure account to, actually, they already had the Azure account technically, but putting in credentials for an Azure account and actually sending sample messages. So you get the server basically set up, and then it's sending messages to the client. So you can change, for example, the image, send
yep.
a toast,
yep.
send a tile, all the different types of notifications that you can then customize directly from that.
That's great. And some great techno music in that video that they put together, have fun with that.
Love it.
So so with Windows 8 Consumer Preview, we also got a new set of development tools, and we also got a new Windows Simulator. And so this article takes you through some of the changes to the Windows Simulator, like how do you work with, you know, Pinch and Zoom, and how do you set GPS location right within the simulator, just making it really, really easy for you to develop applications and test them the same way that your consumers might in the wild. And you can check in any location in the world with a Foursquare application just by setting your location right here.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right?
I'm going to be the mayor of everything.
And another cool feature, I think, is actually taking a screenshot, too, just because it's such a handy and well-known thing, and you're probably going to need it for your store app anyways.
Which I would love for the Windows Phone 7 emulator to support that, too. I don't think it's there yet. So, yeah. Awkward.
Awkward. So our next story.
So Robert
what
Green,
is this?
Robert Green, friend of the show, did a toolbox interview with two of the guys, Dan Dole and Sam Zeiss, behind some of the simplifications that have happened to the Visual Studio 11 IDE. And we say simplifications, it's not just, you know, fewer menus and that sort of thing, but it's also, hey, I'm just trying to get something simple done. I'm trying to find a command in here, the brand new Quick Launch that allows me to just start typing, you know, IntelliTrace, and it brings up all the windows that are relevant to me, those sorts of things. Productivity and Power Tools from 2010 is now in the box with 11. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we've talked about that one in particular, but there's so many commands in Visual Studio.
Mm-hmm.
What this allows you to do is basically you don't know where the command is,
right.
say, and you can easily find it just by using, say, keywords. So debug, you get all the options for debug, IntelliTrace,
yep.
and so on.
Exactly. So I love these guys. These guys are focused full-time on trying to make Visual Studio kind of a little bit friendlier cockpit for you. So optimizing the .NET Framework deployment experience for users and developers. So this is a really nice article that Brandon Bray and team wrote. They're on the .NET Framework engineering team. And Brandon goes through and he talks about kind of the history here with the deployment of the .NET Framework runtime.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back in the day, it used to be, you know, something that people had to go out and download explicitly. Eventually, they baked it into Windows Update and some operating systems, including Windows 8. It's now baked in. The .NET Framework 4.5 ships as part of the operating system. Depending on your deployment of the operating system, it may be an optional feature that you have to enable or not. But they're really trying to focus on making it as easy as possible for your end users to deploy and download if they need to the .NET Framework, which is super important in an ISV scenario where you're going to be building, say, an accounting application and then sending it out to your customers and they need to have that runtime. So
sure.
I really like this engineering focus, and Brandon did a great job of kind of rolling up that history and showing the work that his team's done over the years.
Cool.
So, friend of the show here, Bart DeSmits.
Yeah, so really it's talking about the Reactive Extensions version 2. So, there's a lot that's going on here. Charles goes into this in much more detail, but, you know, some of the key highlights are support for Windows 8.
Mm-hmm. And Windows Phone.
And Windows Phone. And some of the things that Bart talks about, that they had to re-architect the library. So, in his blog post, he actually has a sort of visualization in terms of a visualization of the architecture where they had to refactor things to make for portability and then do the specific libraries for platforms. So,
okay.
Kind of interesting in terms of the steps that you had to take for refactoring and thinking around library portability. Now, the other big thing is async and await support. So being able to do awaitables naturally inside RX. And Charles actually spends a lot of time talking to him there.
Cool. And speaking of writing code, which is portable across different operating environments.
If only.
So our next story is a really nice detailed walkthrough on the portable class libraries, or oftentimes referred to as just portable libraries. And so this is a new capability within Visual Studio for you to write a class library or a set of class libraries, and for you to specify as part of the design time, hey, this is a library that I want to be callable from Windows 8, from Windows Phone, and from Windows 7. And so then the library project itself is aware of all the different capabilities and properties and limitations of those different platforms. So as you're constructing your code, it's going to limit the APIs that you have access to that subset to make it really easy for you to maintain this common code base that you can then call across those different environments.
Sure, and really this is for class libraries. So things like XAML aren't necessarily going to work because there's things that happen differently on the UX platform. And you know, for our car project, because we have libraries that do things, for example, on the phone and on PC, and some even on Micro Framework, class portability was one of the key things that we were looking at.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of times you're doing if-def statements and things like that. So,
cool.
I think this is kind of awesome.
Nice. Good stuff.
So our friend Laurent.
Yeah, friend Laurent. From this is a Tech Day session from Belgium, I believe.
Yeah, so Laurent from Identity Mine, we've talked about him several times. Specifically because he has a MVVM Lite library. And in this case, he actually has almost an update to the mix talk that he had given some time ago on MVVM applied from Silverlight to Windows Phone to Windows 8. And Windows 8 being, I think, one of the new key things that he's talking about in terms of how you design applications that remove application logic from, say, the code behind and actually build a model and then a view model that actually attaches that. So everything, instead of having code behind where, say, you have a button click, instead you have view model code and you're doing declarative binding, setting the data source and then binding to that view model.
Okay, and is that so that you get better application portability across operating systems and maintainability, or is that really just so that you can focus on the Windows 8 model, which prefers that?
No, one of the big reasons, and Laurent does go into the why, but one of the big reasons is testability. So, for example, with a view model, because the view model is at the end of the day just code, you can call directly into that. You can build unit tests against that view model that say, you know, get customers.
Got it.
Or get customers with ID. And it's not, I'm not trying to hack a call
layer
of a button click event because a button click event is private. But then if I set it public, I'm kind of breaking its own cohesion and isolation and so on. So,
got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense. That's great. So updated PowerShell scripts. This is an article from John Robbins over at Wintellect, really sharp guy. And he's talking about how to use PowerShell scripts to manage your symbol server and your source server settings. What's this all about?
Yeah, so you know, a lot of times you have to make these settings to basically set up your symbol server and source server. They're kind of a pain, so he did the process of doing the automation for it.
Okay.
So if you're looking to set those up, to be able to set up the NT source path and the symbol path for things. And the idea here behind something like symbol server is you can actually step into debug, right? So it's like, for whatever reason, You know, system XML serialization is throwing some bug, and we don't know why. We can actually step into that code.
Well, I know why, but this is so you can figure it out.
Oh, okay, okay, tough guy.
And this is especially helpful if you're using IntelliTrace, and you have people that are maybe collecting IntelliTrace data in a test environment, and they may be using a different build than what you're looking at in front of you, because if you set up your source and symbols servers and folders directly, then when you get those IntelliTrace files, they'll automatically pull up the right corresponding version of the source and symbols, so you can do that debug.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
And I know that John is a huge fan of IntelliTrace, so I'd imagine that his interest here is in part at least motivated by IntelliTrace.
Yeah, and you know, one other random thing that he happened to throw in there, he threw a systernals, a way to download the systernals zip and extract them automatically. So a lot of people use systernals. He
bonus
was like, it's kind of like a bonus script in the PowerShell, so cool stuff.
That's cool. Which brings us to Picks of the Week. So this is something that came out of the Microsoft research team, and I really like it. It's just a nice visualization of everything, really. It's the history of our universe, going back to the Big Bang Theory. You can drill into that, and you can understand more about the Big Bang Theory. You can drill in then and see kind of how the Earth and the solar system are just a tiny portion of the overall history of universe and everything, and then you can drill in and you can see where humans were introduced as just a very tiny sliver, but you can kind of deep zoom drill in every step of the way. The one thing that I wish they had was keyboard bindings, because I find myself zooming in and then wanting to press up to go back or left and right, that sort of thing. But anyway, regardless, it shouldn't take away from the fact this is a great visualization.
Yeah, I mean, literally just thinking about, because they have a timeline of the billions of years that happen and where Earth happens, and then you start thinking about the history of mankind, and it's like 40,000 out of a billion is like a tiny sliver.
Right. And then what's really cool, I don't know if you did this, but if you zoom all the way to the upper right-hand corner, which is the most recent event, it shows Dan and Brian are recording a video about ChronoZoom. So it's awesome. It's dynamically updated.
It's kind of meta.
Yeah,
okay.
Very meta.
Love it.
Yeah. Brings us to your pick of the week.
So my pick of the week is the light trikes at South by Southwest. So this is a project Jared Ficklin and his team at Frog did, but I think it was a really fun one. You know, obviously it's Tron with bicycles, but it sort of brings up that like making the digital physical and making the physical digital. So like literally you have to pedal. And one of the things I didn't realize is, you know, when you're actually on a Tron bike and you're looking through, you really do not have the perspective. Like what you see if we can throw up that picture, the one in the center is the overhead display. Mm-hmm. And that's the one we're used to playing with, like in the actual Tron game. But when you get the first person perspective, it is impossible to tell whether the trail that you're following is a recent trail or where, like basically you start following the trail to try and get out. And it's actually really hard when you have that perspective versus the heads up display, the overhead head display.
So nice.
It's a very cool thing. And I think it was a lot of fun.
Was Tron Man there?
No, Tron Man would have been awesome.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah, that would have been brilliant.
Next year.
Next year.
Next year. All right. Well, great show. We'll see you next week.
Thanks.